Welcome to the Advisor Advocates Podcast. My name is Garrett Lill. I'm a certified financial planner and former advisor. And I started Advisor Advocates in this podcast to share with other advisors some of the experience that I like to say I accidentally accumulated over the course of my 13-year career, especially around the areas of the industry involving transitions from one firm to the other, advisor recruiting, M&A deals, things of that nature. Interesting thing for advisors that I've experienced in my career is that advisors are often on an island. We don't really know what's out there. We don't know what's going on outside the walls of our firm and outside the confines of our own practices. Especially when I was working in the recruiting industry and talking with advisors, there were just so many advisors who didn't know what they didn't know. So the purpose of this podcast and Advisor Advocates is to help bridge that information gap, to help advisors understand a little bit more about what the landscape looks like out there, what options are available to you, and sort of share some of the insights that I've ran into and hopefully answer some of the most common questions that advisors have. Welcome to part three of the Focus of the Firm series, finally putting a lid on this little accidental rabbit hole that I let myself go down a couple of episodes back. Not to be too presumptuous that you've already watched the other two episodes in this series, so we'll kind of recap very briefly. Two shows ago, sort of opened this thing up talking about the emergence of this new trend where firms can be either focused on advisor success, team success, or ultimately the brand success. On the previous episode, part two, I kind of focused more on the independent version of that, where you can be, you know, I talked a little bit about how you can be independent in an advisor-focused model, you can be independent in a team-focused model, or you can be independent in a firm-focused culture. On this episode, we're really going to dig a little bit deeper into the employee side of that. I do have to kind of give a disclaimer, I guess. This whole industry is disclaimers. But I have to give a little bit of a disclaimer here that when I use the term employee, that can be a little bit ambiguous. It's not usually going to be. But there are some situations where you may be independent in terms of the way I would define it and having control of your book and having control of your destiny or ownership of your business, but still have access to W-2 benefits. There also may be some situations where you may technically be a 1099 contractor, but everything else may look and feel as if you were an employee. So I use this term more to define the restrictiveness when it comes to non-competes and book ownership and portability of your book if you decide to leave and go elsewhere. In this video, we're really focusing on more of the rigid non-compete structure where if you're in one of these types of environments, it probably means that if you do leave to go to another firm, you're not going to be able to take your clients with you, or at least not be able to do so without running the risk of running into legal fights and legal battles along the way. And on the last show, I spent a little bit of time kind of talking about the cause of the shift in what I talked about. It's become easier for advisors to become independent, or it's become easier to have your own independent practice, and that was because of technology advancements and fee compression and economies of scale, allowing for fee compression and creating more competition. The topic of this video also has a root cause as well, and that is that there's actually an increase in demand from my experience and my conversations with advisors. I think there's a little bit of an increase in demand for a traditional employee type role as well, where I keep going back to 20 years ago as my reference point, but at some point in the past, a lot of advisors may have aspired to become independent. Maybe some didn't make that jump because of comfort or because of the economics behind it or whatever the case may have been. But a lot of advisors did want to be independent. I think now you're seeing a shrinking percentage of advisors wanting to be independent. That doesn't necessarily mean the majority want to be employees. It doesn't necessarily, I'm not trying to put a number to it, but I do think that if you were to survey the entire advisor population and at this point in time and ask them what their preference would be, being independent or working for another organization as an employee, and compared that to a couple of decades back, I would be interested to see how that comes out, because I wouldn't be surprised if there aren't more advisors wanting to kind of gravitate to an employee model now. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is, quite simply, I think some advisors got a taste of independence and decided that it wasn't actually all it was cracked up to be, and they decided they wanted to go work for someone else and let them write the checks and pay the bills and deal with compliance and all that stuff. But a more serious reason for that is that as we've seen a rise in the importance of planning and the fiduciary standards, as I kind of talked about on the first episode of this, it is starting to attract and really need a different type of professional that may not necessarily fit that traditional sales role or that communicator role or that relationship manager role. So you're starting to see more accountants and engineers and business executives and teachers and educators and a lot of different categories starting to come to the industry and starting to find that there's actually a home for them now where, you know, maybe if you were a brilliant engineer who had a great mind for numbers, but you weren't very good at communicating, there wasn't really a place for you in the industry, you know, 20 years ago. Now there, you're a lot more of those folks are finding homes where they can focus on what they're good at, do what they're good at, and still be able to thrive in that. And then you're also finding risk appetite to some extent. I was kind of joking about that a moment ago, but really there are a lot of advisors who have who are in the industry, like doing the work. They just don't want the responsibility of independence. They don't want the responsibility of having to file business tax returns, and they don't like having to craft their own employee benefits and find their own health insurance and all those types of things. They just want to show up, go to work, get a paycheck, and go home and be with their families and live normal lives. So I think because of that, and also as the industry is growing, the offers and the jobs and the opportunities that are there in the employee roles are starting to be a lot more competitive. I mean, when I was in college, first thinking about getting into this industry, I honestly thought, and I didn't know any better, I thought that being a financial advisor meant you went to work for a firm, you worked with your clients, you made the money, and then you got a salary plus bonuses based on how much money you made for your clients and how many accounts you had. I had no idea that it was 100% commission for the most part until my first couple of interviews and kind of learned that it was really hard to find a salary role in this industry. I can say for certainty now that there are a lot of really good jobs out there for folks who just want to be planners. They just want to have a job of working with their clients and be paid a salary or bonuses based on their performance, not necessarily based on their sales skills. And some of these salaries can be fairly lucrative with the right firms. They're still, I mean, I think I've done an episode on advisor compensation. I think a lot of employee type roles do gravitate to that $60,000, $80,000 a year range plus bonuses based on, you know, growth and sales and things of that nature. But there are some really good paying, you know, $120,000, $150,000, $180,000 jobs out there, kind of few and far between. They're not the easiest things in the world to find, but I do know of firms that are offering those types of roles and struggling to find people for them. So as the jobs are getting better and the demand for jobs like that are also increasing, you are starting to see this employee type of arrangement for a financial advisor become more and more common. And within that structure, there also is that advisor-focused culture, team-focused culture, or brand-focused culture. So I want to spend some time on this show kind of peeling back what that looks like and maybe just providing a little bit more detail on what who's the right fit for each of these roles and also shedding a little bit more light on what types of firms are out there for advisors looking for those roles. So the first of these categories is the most commonly known, and of all of the categories that I've talked about in all three of these videos, really, this is probably the oldest, right? This is the financial advisor who is 100% sales-based, who's paid 100% on commissions, and their pay is going to be 100% correlated to their book of business, the size of their business, how good they are at building that business. But these advisors have basically decided that they will build larger businesses by working within someone else's organization than they would if they went out and created their own. And for a lot of advisors, they are not wrong in this. Even if you are an independent with all the support that the independent firms are providing now, there are some things that advisors are still going to have to do that some advisors just don't want to do. So those traditional employee channels still make a lot of sense for a lot of advisors. And if you're really good at managing relationships, closing deals, developing business, there is something to be said for just being able to focus on what you're good at and not having to spend time managing a team or not having to spend time in operations or compliance or marketing or wherever you don't want to spend time. Show up, close the deal, get paid, rinse and repeat seems to kind of be the anthem of this cohort of advisors. Characteristics of this job are going to be your inside of a large organization who's providing you all the infrastructure that you need, you're able to sort of piggyback off of or ride the wave of the success that this organization is having and participate in their growth engine. But you're going to be paid based on how well you are able to execute in that environment, and the bigger producers are going to get paid much more. Typically, your payouts are going to be in the 40 to 50% range for most of these jobs, although there's certainly, once you throw in bonuses and other things, even equity potentially in the firm that you're working with, that can start to approach 60, 65, maybe 70% with some firms. But the advisors that are staying in these models are basically, as I said in the video before, basically deciding that 50% of what they can produce in the right infrastructure and the right system is more than 90% of what they're going to be able to produce creating it for themselves. More than 70% they might get with an independent team. So that is the advisor-focused employee model. You are an employee, you have benefits, you work for someone else who owns your book of business. They are providing you with the tools to build that book of business, and you are compensated based on how well you build your book of business in that environment. The second alternative, or the second flavor of this, you might say, is the employee team model. I think the employee team model is probably one of the most rapidly growing phenomenons in the industry, and it's actually, I think, for good reason. I think it's really good for clients, it's really good for the advisors, it's really good for the firms that are assembling these teams. And this approach is to assemble a team of professionals where each advisor has a specific expertise or a specific category that they excel in, whether that be estate planning, taxes, investments, financial planning, insurance, even some scenarios where firms may have a unique niche where they're looking for advisors who serves a specific type of demographic or offers a certain miscellaneous service for a particular type of clientele that is maybe their niche. If you are an absolute rock star at one thing and one thing only, you can now have success by being on a team of all stars. And it's really good for the clients because they're getting really an expert handling every single lane of their financial lives. And for those experts themselves, they get to just really focus on what they're good at. Sometimes this may be employee benefits, 401k specialists, et cetera. I mean, there's so many things that as the industry has become more and more specialized, there's more and more opportunities for the advisors to really dig in and say, rather than being a jack of all trades, I want to be a master of one. And then I'm going to surround myself with other masters of their trades, and we're going to be an all-star team for our clients. Compensation in these models can vary. There are some scenarios where this is a base salary role, and essentially your bonuses are going to be determined by client success, client retention. You may get some type of a profit-sharing bonus as well, so that if the team is successful as a whole, you're going to be compensated for your contribution to that. I've even seen some go so far as to say maybe 60% of your compensation is a base pay, maybe 10% is based on your own performance, but 30% of your compensation may come from the success of the team. So it is creating that environment that's encouraging collaboration, and you want to see the team do well, but you're also really getting to focus on what you're best at and what you're bringing to the table. So when you look at the lifestyle and the work life for the type of advisor who's in that role, they really get to, pardon the term, but geek out on the thing that they excel at the most and really get to provide the highest and deepest level of service for their clients in the arena that they are providing that skill or that service. And it also doesn't have the headaches and the sleepless nights of the sales components of it. These advisors are not having to chase commission targets. They're not having to worry about, what if I lose this client, I'm not going to be able to pay my mortgage next month. They're able to have a higher degree of certainty in their futures and in their own financial lives. Yes, probably without the upside of being able to potentially make millions of dollars if they're the best at what they do. But a lot of these types of advisors aren't wired to chase millions of dollars. They don't have that entrepreneurial, I want to go make as much money as I possibly can. They like stability. They like being able to focus on what they're good at, get paid, and go spend time with their families and be and have lives. Another version of this model when it comes to compensation may be a revenue share. And I think that's actually one of the really really cool ways that this can be structured is to basically assign a revenue share to each member of the team. And these may be even layered to some extent, right? You may have a $100 million team producing $1 million in revenue, and each advisor may have a 10% payout from the revenue that's produced from the entire team. Well, that's $100,000. That's essentially your base pay, right? Even though it's technically commission, it is you're getting a percentage of the overall book. But as the business grows and the team has success, you're getting a pay increase along with that. You also may see layers to this where maybe everybody gets 10%, but any relationship you bring into the team, maybe you get a 20% payout on that instead of a 10%. You may also see this stacked with a base salary in some way or other types of bonus structures. So there are ways that the compensation can be arranged in this type of a team environment where the success of the team ultimately is going to determine your success, and it's going to be shared pretty equitably between, or it's going to be divided pretty equitably amongst the team members, regardless of what their role was. Maybe you do get a little bit more for bringing a relationship to the table because, hey, that is what drives growth for the firm, but it's not celebrated and rewarded nearly as much as it might be in the advisor-focused success model or the advisor success-focused model that is a little bit more traditional. And then there are examples of employee-type roles that really celebrate and compensate based on the success of the firm more than the advisor or the team. And these can be really difficult to categorize because it typically is because a firm has carved out a specific niche of some way that they are able to generate revenue or some way that they're able to drive new business that is truly unique to them, and it's very difficult for others to replicate for whatever the reason. And because of these things are so niche-y, it's very hard to categorize them and say, okay, they all do this one, you know, this one thing in particular, because by definition, doing one unique thing very well is what kind of makes them special. So it's kind of hard to generalize them. But an example of this might be a firm who has just a marketing super engine, and they have a fantastic digital marketing program, or they have a terrific YouTube channel, or they've got a great TikTok following, or whatever is out there nowadays, that whatever they're doing is generating so many new opportunities and new leads that an advisor joining that system is going to create more success for that type of advisor than they would be able to generate in any of the other models, or at least that's the perception. A good example of this, I came across an advisor a few years ago that was in this type of a scenario. They were only getting a 20% payout on the business that they were generating, but they literally had leads set up on their calendar every day that they had to do nothing really to go hunt for. The firm themselves had a marketing engine that was generating legitimate bona fide leads that all this advisor had to do was show up, close the deal, and get paid for it. It really was kind of a shoot and fish in the barrel type of a scenario. So 20% of a really big number is still more than 40% of a medium-sized number or 90% of a really small number of eat what you kill type thing. So in those scenarios, the advisor might at some point get a little bit disgruntled and say, oh, I could go somewhere else and make twice as much or pay four times as much in some situations. But they have to really ask themselves, can I actually replicate what is happening here? And are these clients loyal to me or are they loyal to the firm itself? Sometimes this may even come from a money management platform. Maybe there's a proprietary product that really is good that if the advisor leaves, the clients can't take that investment and go with them. Or it could be that non-competes have a lot more enforceability. If I literally handed you a client on a silver platter and then you turn around and take that client across the street, that gives me a lot more legal leverage to be able to come back and say you stole that from me than if you went out and put forth the effort that generated the new relationship. You just did it under my flag or under my supervision, right? So in those types of scenarios, yeah, you are more captive to the environment that you're in. You are much more beholden to the firm, and it really is that firm success that is generating your success as an individual, and that is going to be reflected in your contracts. But it also starts to look a little bit more like the type of job that I was thinking that this was when I was in college, right? Of just show up, get clients, do good work, get paid well, move on. That is able to be created in some of those scenarios. The compensation can vary quite a bit in these types of roles, really, right? There may be some that are base salary plus bonuses based on how well you sell. They may be, it may be even like a hedge fund who's bonusing portfolio managers for their performance. There are a lot of different ways that this firm-based culture might, or firm-centric culture might compensate their advisors and their employees. But at the end of the day, two things are going to be in common. Number one, the majority of the compensation is going to be either a base salary or some type of a bonus that is dependent on the firm's success. Or at the very least, if that firm is doing something very special and that is what's helping you to be able to close more business, if the thing that that firm is doing goes away or they lose their competitive edge, it's going to have a direct financial impact on the employees and the advisors there. In those environments, it's going to be very difficult for an advisor to skate out the back door without violating their non-compete. And again, that non-compete is going to be pretty enforceable in those situations as well. One word of caution, though, when it comes to this type of thing. There are probably 10 firms out there touting that they have a bona fide marketing engine in place that is going to be able to create more for you than you would be able to do for yourself, for every one firm that's out there that actually does it. I come across a lot of these, or have come across a lot of these over my career, and there are some out there that when I talk to them and I get to know them and I vet it a little bit, yes, they're telling the truth. They really do have their, you know, they can back up their statement. But I have talked to a lot of firms, probably, again, I don't know if 10 to 1 might be exaggerating, but at least 5 to 1 more firms that think because they get 17 client referrals a year that they have a massive super engine that you should plug yourself into, and it's really just total BS. I don't mean to say it so bluntly, but that's exactly what it is. It's total BS. It's just an excuse for them to give you a lower payout than what you should get or what might you might be entitled to. So if you are choosing to hitch your wagon to a firm because they have the super engine or they have the super special thing that is going to be able to generate more leads for you than you would have ever been able to imagine, just be extra careful to make sure that it really does deliver that. Talk with their other advisors, do your homework, check with me if I've come across them, whatever. But do some homework on that and just make sure that it is what it says it is. Otherwise, you may just be agreeing to take a huge cut in your payout for no reason. So hopefully in all of this, I've helped to reset the landscape for you just a little bit and helped you to understand a little bit more about what's out there and the different ways you can not only be compensated, but also just the different types of cultures and environments that are out there. And hopefully this gives you, even if it doesn't necessarily answer all your questions, hopefully it at least gives you sort of a fresher look at the way firms are positioning themselves, the way advisors are starting to gravitate to different types of roles in the industry. And as always, if you have any questions at all, or if I can help you in any way, feel free to reach out. Give me a call at 919-561-2436. That's in the description below as well. Shoot me an email to garrett@theadvisoradvocates.com. Go to theadvisoradvocates.com and schedule time on my calendar. Any way you'd like to get in touch, I would love to chat with you if I can help. I appreciate your time. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching if you're on YouTube. And if I can help, love to chat with you soon.